Welcome to Season 10, Episode 12 of RPG Circus, the greatest show in gaming. In this episode, we discuss pets, mounts, familiars, and animal companions. Again, welcome to Season 10, Episode 12 of RPG Circus. My name, of course, is Jeff, and joining me this week is Chris and Ish. Welcome, gentlemen.
Good to be on.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this, see what we can wean out of this topic. There's really not much news, although you did put a note in here, I think, that Free RPG was last Saturday. Did any of you guys get involved? I didn't.
I was at Origins.
Ah.
So I don't think they had anything there. I can go into it later, but there was really only one thing that I wanted, and I might try and hit up my gaming store and see if they have any copies left over.
Ah. Yeah, it's always tough. I don't really ever get out. It's like usually if I pick up anything that was from Free RPG Day, it's usually some leftovers at a convention, like Gen Con. A lot of times they'll pass out stuff that they gave out. So it's like, eh. Okay, sure. And then half of that stuff, I won't lie, ends up in the recycle.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like, it was free. It's not worth giving to anybody because no one I know wants it. I ask, and they're like, no, I'm not interested. And it's like, well, I don't want it either. And it's not like you can sell it or give it away at this point. So recycle rather than landfill.
Yeah, I think I may have told this story before, but a couple of years ago, I tried going to Free RPG Day with a buddy of mine, and we found out that basically one store in town is the only one that had access to Free RPG Day, and they don't have too good a reputation, so that was an experience and a half. Like, I wanted to keep doing it, but at the same time, I don't know. Like, you gotta present the product somehow, I guess.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is I think a lot of for some of it, some of this Free RPG stuff, it's like, well, it's not a game I'm currently playing, and it's not quite a game I'm interested in, so not worth it for me. But that's not to say that for other people it isn't worth it. Maybe they're looking for something new. And so, yeah, it comes up every year, and I don't think there's been a year that we've actually ever really hit it, because it's just like, I always forget about it. It usually happens between weeks or, you know, by the time it's like, oh yeah, Free RPG Day. I completely forgot that we need to mention that. I don't know.
Yeah. So, go on, Ish.
Oh, I was just going to say, I feel the same way about Free RPG Day that I do about Free Comic Book Day, and they've just changed. They're not the same creature that they were 5 years ago, 10 years ago. But I used to go and enjoy the things that they would hand out, and it was a good reason to go to the comic book store. But now you just get like a whole mob of people or no one at all. And it just doesn't mean the same thing. I couldn't put my finger on what's different, but something's different. And I have a feeling some of it is digitization.
Well, I'm sure that's some of it. I mean, it's like I tell people about Gen Con. It's like the last Gen Con I went to, it definitely did not have the same feel or even desirability that a couple of the other ones I've attended did. And some of it is just size and scope. And, you know, there is a changing dynamic. And I respect the fact that, you know, it's just not my thing anymore. You know, I mean, even the people that I would normally meet there typically are not going anymore.
So, bummer.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, probably the best one that I ever did was, I don't know if it was what year of the podcast was in. Maybe year one or year two? Because I went. I mean, the RPG bloggers was very popular. It was one of those watershed moments where a lot of those guys were actually going to Gen Con that year, and they were damn determined to meet up with everyone that was a member of that blog network at the time. And so, you know, you ended up I met a lot of bloggers, and it was actually, for me, it was more of that kind of a social event where, you know, hey, we're all gamers, we're gaming here, but we're also meeting up and hooking up and doing various things. So that was probably one of my best Gen Cons. And then I think the next time I went to Gen Con where Michael Wolff from Stargazer's World actually had come over from Germany, and me and him were staying with Zach. You know, that was probably the best year for Gen Con for me. And again, I think it was because I had certain social elements in addition to other stuff that was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And nowadays, I just don't get that feel. Like, you know, I have met up with people, and we're all just kind of like, yeah. And some of it is the size. Gen Con has definitely exploded to a size where I just don't feel like it's, I feel like it's too big. And it's just not what I want to enjoy anymore. So enough of that. Why don't we get into the topic of the day, unless there's anything else anyone wants to discuss?
No, the only thing I might say is, like, I think we're kind of burying the lead a little bit here. Ish went to Gen Con Origins, and he had a great time, apparently.
Oh, good.
Yeah. It was awesome, and not too big a show. I met a lot of people I ran into that I knew from online only. It was really cool.
Yeah, you see, that was my experience when the first time I ever went to Gen Con. It's like, hey, I know a lot of these people, you know, went to a lot of weird parties, met a lot of people that were just like me in certain aspects in terms of they almost don't, they like, I know that, I've heard of that guy, but they don't want to talk to that person because they haven't been introduced to that person. You know,
yes,
you know, classic quasi introvert things, you know.
Yes.
So it's just like, and I laugh, I tell people, I said, it's really funny that you end up introducing people to other people that they want to meet only because you've actually met them and talked to them already, so you can actually offer an introduction, because otherwise they wouldn't have talked to that person,
right?
And it's hilarious. I just find that hilarious, you know, just from the standpoint of, you know, I am that guy. I am that guy. Don't let the podcast fool you. You know. So.
Oh, I had moments.
Oh, I think we all have. I mean, I think.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that all gamers are introverts, but I think there's a higher proportion of introverts in the gaming universe than there are extroverts.
Yep. Surprising what you'll say when you feel like you have a bit of an anonymity than when you're out in the public.
Yeah, that too. All right, so let's get into the topic, which, of course, is pets, mounts, familiars, and animal companions. I kind of expanded a little bit. We were originally, you mentioned pets, and I'm like, well, you know, well, along with pets, there's other animals. There's obviously mounts, familiars, and obviously animal companions, which, depending on the system and how you define them, pretty much encompasses everything, I think. Did I miss anything in this gathering?
Basically, associated critter. For lack of a better term.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the main reason I brought it up is because it's something that happens in a lot of games, but it's also kind of, there's some kind of questions I have about the concept when it comes down to it. Like, ultimately, I consider the purpose of pets to be additional character background, you know, background connection, a companion, an association with a desired skill, or an extension of a character. And one of the things I keep fighting with the concept of any of the, for lack of a term, associated critter, is whether it's an extension of your character or whether it's actually its own independent character.
Yeah.
Like, sorry.
I couldn't help that one. Yes, the answer to that is yes.
Okay, fair enough. Like, exactly. Like, when you deal with Dungeons & Dragons, you have your animal companion for Dwarf Ranger, you have your familiars for Sorcerers, Wizards, and of course you have that very special mount for your Paladin, and there's also other variants and ideas there. So, I guess my first question to you guys is, have you ever had a pet in a game? Or familiar, or mount, or what have you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think for me, it varies. I think for certain, you know, to answer your question was, where are they just kind of there, or are they an extension of the character? And I think it kind of depends. It depends on the character and obviously the relationship that you want your character to have with the animal. Because, you know, in a lot of games, take mounts, I would have to say most characters don't have, it's like they probably don't even have a name for their horse. It's like horse or donkey. There you go. I don't have any more information than that. And in that case, it's really almost a skill extension.
You know, yeah.
Provides
yeah.
them something that they don't possess themselves. That's it.
Yeah, like the ability to get to a point A to point B faster.
I don't like saying animals are tools, but I would say almost like tool or utilitarian. That's it. You know, that. But yet, when you get into, obviously, familiars and animal companions, and, you know, depending on the character, certain mounts, and even certain pets, I think it really depends on the character himself. I mean, you know, you take something like, I don't know, I'm thinking of, I can think of movies where, like, the, you know, they come get the guy that, what's his job? He has a whole bunch of bloodhounds, the dogs. They're still extension of himself, but without them, he is nothing. So, you know, that those dogs, you know, are kind of part of his character in that aspect.
Mm-hmm.
So, but are, you know, can they be their own characters? Yeah, I mean, if you take any, obviously anything where a player has some sort of creature that has some sort of almost its own intelligence, that's important. Well, all animals have their own intelligence. I'm not trying to say that animals are unintelligent. But I mean, in terms of, like, especially when you look at, like, a lot of, depending on the game system, a lot of familiars tend to have, like, quasi, there's, the way we've decided sentience, you know, they almost have, like, sentient skill, you know, intelligence. Humanized intelligence, if you will.
Yeah, I can see that. So, do you have a pet that you ever had in a game that really strikes out, that you remember with a lot of fondness or anything like that?
I remember one of my characters. I would always make these wildly suboptimal characters in old 3.5 D&D games, almost as a protest to the way that the game was meant to be optimized. But I had a barbarian druid just because I thought it was an interesting concept. But in those days, the druid got an animal companion, and I had this wolf. And the wolf ended up having, like, more hit points than the dwarven fighter in our group, which I always tease that dwarven fighter about because he took pride in how many hit points he had. But Sijak was his name. I still remember. And he was a really awesome wolf. Like, one of the cool things I was able to leverage was, like, to give him templates and size. I think the wolf really was the character at that point. He was a little bit more badass than my barbarian wolf or a barbarian druid.
Yeah, I've noticed that as well. Like, sometimes your pet's way cooler than your character. yeah, I don't know how to describe it any other way. Like, my own. Yeah, go on, sorry.
No, you're absolutely right. I can't think of one myself, but I know in games that I've run, players have had just that same exact thing. You know, in a Solomon Kane game that I ran, one of the players played, like, some sort of real, like, Russian strongman, if you will. You know, like a circus performer kind of strongman.
Mm-hmm.
And his character did have a high strength, so that was definitely a defining feature of his character. But the other thing was is that he actually took the animal companion edge twice so he could get a bear.
Nice.
And so in that aspect, that bear was more his character than his strongman character that he had.
Yeah. I could see that. In fact, I got my own little story. It's actually not mine technically, but I was involved in a game where, actually, no, it was my character. I was playing a 49er from Deadlands, you know, basically a 40-year-old gun veteran, and I ended up with a burro named Bessie. So one of the cool things about Deadlands is you used to pull cards for your animal's personality. The bloody thing was Harrowed. It was undead, and we didn't know about it.
Wow.
It literally was going around eating meat, and we basically just kept throwing it scraps. But it was basically a burro, okay? And that was just one of those, like, we pulled a Joker, if you know anything about Deadlands, you know, the original classic Deadlands. And it gave it became one of the neatest characters in the game as far as that's concerned. Even though it was basically it didn't really do anything, but just the sheer concept of this undead donkey hanging around with our party was just added a certain ambience, and I had a lot of fun with it.
Well, I wonder if you would call that the tail wagging the dog, not to throw out a pun. That's a little too apropos. Yeah. But one thing I think I've noticed is with familiars especially, they tend to be very uninteresting. And they don't kind of take that center stage, and they don't like become characters in their own right. Unless there's something different, like, you know, sometimes you can have an imp or a pseudo dragon, and that's different enough that you actually pay attention. But for those who read that Order of the Stick web comic, that was lampooned thoroughly with the wizard's character, the wizard's familiar, who would kind of pop in and out of his existence based on when the wizard would remember that they had a familiar in the first place.
You know,
but I think I'm seeing more people.
No, I'm just saying that you're right. That is very, very, very common.
I'm seeing more people who are kind of trying to highlight the eccentricity of their characters by kind of highlighting their familiars. I think there's a little bit of a shift going on now where I see more people paying more attention to that. But it didn't used to be back in the day.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is a trend. I know I've done that a little bit myself with a 5th edition game that we were playing, where I ended up playing a wizard. I had a familiar, I think I chose a rat, or whatever, the mouse rat, whatever was the appropriate choice, I forget which. Because I'm thinking, okay.
I think it was rat.
Yeah. And, you know, my character's background, it's like, instead of, you know, I chose, instead of like, you know, like, instead of rolling or just, I just said, oh, I like the idea of a sailor background for the guy. So it makes sense. He's a sailor. He has a rat, and you know, unlike other times, it's like, yeah, I gave him a name, you know, because I thought that was, you know, very appropriate. And it's like it was a defining feature of the character to me, rather than be like, oh, I have this rat familiar. No, this is the rat that I have in my pocket, and his name is Timmons.
Well, that's something I've been thinking about a lot lately. Actually, I thought about it for a lot of periods. I actually think, and this is just my own personal opinion, especially for something like an F20 game, it makes more sense to take it, and if you're going to have a familiar or an animal companion or a mount, it almost needs to be a separate character, almost built as an NPC, because then it becomes its own separate entity and becomes its own personality. Like, I first noticed this similar experience when I ran a Palladium Fantasy role-playing game. And one of the characters, I built a dog for her, and I ended up NPCing the character. And that's the way to do a GMPC if you're going to do it, is have a character who basically is dependent on the other characters that you can use as kind of a guiding post. You know, and personality and filled with quirks and stuff. Because they remember that dog. And then something similar happened when I ran Dark Revelations, where I took a K-9, basically took a cybernetic dog, and used him as the healer of the party. You know, and he's also the guy that basically started the coffee machine, which is always kind of awesome. You know, smart enough to do the jobs that nobody else wants to do, but not enough to dominate the situation. You know.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's stuff like that is how you remember characters, is when they do something different, but you're also now don't have to worry about the baggage of, hey, my character's going to outshadow you. What is he going to do? Hey, you interview the dog. What does he say? Wolf. Okay, that's anticlimactic. And it has a certain element there when it comes to stuff like that. And that's why I kind of, like, I have had characters where I played with owls and for my wizards and stuff like that, but I've also noticed that they ultimately became extensions of, hey, what can I do with it? As opposed to, could you use, you know, the character itself? And I guess my next question is, if they have a pet, should it be used as a plot hook? And if so, how?
I think that's another one that depends. I think it could be. And I mean, if you treat it as any other type of NPC, then, I mean, any available plot hook for an NPC applies, you know. You know, you have a sick, it's sick, it needs a certain healing, or heaven forbid, it's lost. I mean, I think about just, you know, myself as a pet owner in real life. One day, my my dog, one of the gates that we had at the house just got, you know, because we were doing stuff, accidentally got let open, you know, and has free range of the backyard, but the gate was open. He got out. And let me tell you, that was 1 hour, 1.5 hours of sheer terror trying to look for that guy. You know, luckily, you know, I found him, but that's tough.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, I mean, a beloved pet is always, you know, there's a plot hook there, you know. Maybe someone kidnapped him to try to extort money from you. You know, if they know that you really love your pet. You know, and then there's other instances, you know. Again, like I said, the healing ones really could be really important. I remember watching this documentary about these... it was called Happy People, was it? I think it was. I think it was called Happy People. And it was like about these Russians that are trappers up in like this godforsaken country. And of course they have dogs. And this one guy was like, yeah, he says his one dog actually saved his life because it jumped up and attacked a bear.
Holy cannoli.
You know,
that dog's got cojones.
Right. Well, the dog unfortunately passed because it sustained a lot of wounds. But you're just thinking, it's like, okay, if that was a very injured dog, I can't imagine if he could have done something, you know, like seeked out someone, some sort of mystic help, what he would not have done for that dog.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those kind of things. You know, so yeah, I think there are plot hooks. I think it's a matter of, like you said, whether or not the players consider them, you know, I don't even want to use the word NPC. I just want to say, you know, like you said, characters in their own right. Rather than just like, oh, it's a dog, it died, I'll pay, you know, 5 gold and get a new one.
Yeah. Also, there's a chance that you might piss off the PCs and the principals. Like, I got another anecdote, of course. I used to own a cat who was incredibly intelligent. And one of the things he used to do was walk up to people, hiss, and then literally look at their face and watch how they responded. And if that ain't familiar behavior, I don't know what is. Kind of the idea that, hey, I'm evaluating you. How are you going to respond to this? Let's find out what your opinion is. And if you do that with the wrong player who's, you know, let's say a cat familiar, and then suddenly their familiar busts off and somebody hisses at somebody who might actually be possessed or demonic, what would he like to do? Would he be, okay, that's a warning sign, or, oh, my cat's being a jerk again? And that's almost another one of those times where you need a rule zero if you're going to have animals involved, just so, which I think are amazing, but they're also vulnerable. You know what I mean? Like, you lose a pet, man, it chokes you up. And adventuring lifestyle ain't exactly the safest thing, no matter what genre you're playing, unless it's playing something there. You know, unless you're playing a very safe game, it's basically the others aren't death, you know? And I guess my question to you is, how much personality should the animals that PCs interact with have? Should you throw in like a random quirk on the character when they assign their character? Or do you have a rule zero to talk it over? Or do you try to find out during gameplay? These are all questions that I don't know if there's an answer for, but it is worth discussing.
I think it's hard to say... you know, it's hard to say at like, you know, at point zero, because at a session zero, because you don't know whether or not they may get animals in the future. So you could have that conversation, but you don't really know until they acquire them. So you could do it at session zero if that's something you know they're going to have right away. But yeah, I think that it would definitely be a side talk, especially later on as they acquire them. But I personally like the idea of assigning quirks to animals, if for no other reason than just to give the players to know that, hey, this is something not, even if it's just like a minor, something that doesn't almost maybe not even come up in play, just something that they know. And, you know, I don't know how to randomly generate those. I'm sure there's a table somewhere that someone has created.
Hackmaster has a horse disposition table.
Well, there
you go. That's
why.
I'm sure it's got other ones on there. You could appropriate it for your use, but Oh man, if you've ever seen the Hackmaster GM screen, that thing is a monster.
Oh wow. I haven't seen the new version of Hackmaster, new being relative speaking, but now you've officially intrigued me. I got to hunt it down in one of these days and try Hackmaster once in my life.
Yeah, you know, for me, it's just a matter of time and effort and stuff that I'm already doing. It's like, okay, another game to put on the list of games that I won't be playing with a whole bunch of other people I know. Because that is always just an aside, that's always a tough thing with any game. It's like, oh, I want to play this new game. It might be the new hotness, it might not be. And just finding other people that are willing to buy in and play with you, sometimes that's difficult. I mean, for myself, there's games that I'm always surprised at that people are interested in playing. One of my personal favorites for Savage Worlds still to this day is Solomon Kane, and I am always amazed at the number of people that go like, that's a good game. I like the setting, I like everything, and you're like, it's not something that you would normally think about off the top of your head. It's like, that even hits you. Like, oh, you know, some you know, 17th century adventuring with horror and supernatural aspects. That doesn't sound interesting. And then they play like, wow, that was fun. You're like, okay. So I've never had a shortage, and I've had people go like, I want to try Solomon Kane again. Okay, we can do that. So, I mean, that's one of those games to me that's always surprised me. So, but that's definitely a game, too, that since at some point the players will usually have some sort of mounts, I could see, you know, if they have personality quirks, that's something I would definitely have to talk over with my players, but I think could be interesting, especially for overland travel. And let's face it, you know, especially if they're in the desert and they get camels. Camels are notorious for being ill-tempered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like, well, how can you not role-play that?
Well, I always think of that one narrative when the U.S. military once tried to have camels put in the military in the Old West era. And remember, to serve me correctly, it did not go well at all.
Interestingly enough, I don't know if there still are in existence, but for a while, there were actually a roving pack of camels, wild camels, because they came from the U.S. Army, really just releasing them into the wild.
Holy cow.
That's an interesting plot look in its own right. What if your pet goes missing and then goes feral, or maybe it's somebody else's pet?
Or, hey, you can go the other way around. I mean, I'm using movie reference. I think of Dances with Wolves. You know, that other, there's a wild dog that almost becomes an attachment to the main character in a way.
Mm. Oh, definitely.
So.
Okay.
It can go either way.
Absolutely. Okay, I got another question. How weird can you get your pets? Like, obviously, you know, your house pets and horses are pretty much a given for most genres, no matter what it is. Or the equivalent alien analog, if you go into more sci-fi type environment. But, you know, like, for example, if you have a familiar that's a pseudo-dragon, you know, a mini-dragon is awesome. And obviously the rules itself would allow it there. But how far can you push the envelope before, I don't know, how far should you push the envelope when it comes to, like, let's say you're in a space campaign. How weird would your familiar pet, maybe your psychic link to it or something, should be before basically you go, okay, I've had enough.
I think that's a function of the player more so than the rules or the background. Because I would accept a familiar or whatever to be as bizarre as possible, as long as it didn't become an issue at the table, as long as it wasn't like an attention grab where it's like, hey, look at me and this weird thing that I've got. You might say that you have like this tesseract that follows you around being all weird and fourth dimensional, as long as that's just for visual cue, you know, that's just to be like, hey, I'm weird. But as soon as it starts being either like a power grab, an attention grab, like, you know, if it messes with either the table dynamics or the, by extension, kind of the power level of the group, that's where I would draw the line.
Yeah, I was just, I don't know why, but I'm sitting here thinking, that, yeah, I mean, typically, obviously, there is a power level that you don't want, you know, they shouldn't outshine the characters, but I was, that's what I was thinking in my head. I'm thinking, but then there's always the possibility that you could reverse the situation where obviously everyone has pets, and those are actually the characters that own the pets are really the secondary bit.
I can see that.
You know, and the only reason I was thinking about this is I'm not a big Pokemon watcher, but I was just thinking, you know, in many ways, the way Pokemon is the Pokemon's outshining all the other characters, in a way.
Yeah.
So, in that aspect, those are the real player characters, you know, it's like I could imagine one of the players actually, the Pokemon is their character, and the human that uses them is really kind of almost the pet.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. If anything, I can't disagree with that. Like, anybody who's owned a pet basically has been known to drop everything to take care of their pet if they're in trouble in some way, shape, or form. And honestly, sometimes your pet is cooler than you are. I'm sorry to say, owners. You know it. I know it. And I would rather play the character. You know, sometimes it depends on the character. That's also why I'd argue that if there's enough meat, have him play the dog if he would be amused by it. Or a bird or whatever is the pet. Like, I always think, well, okay, so I'm going to use examples of media. I always think of Scooby-Doo. Where,
that's a good point. Well,
no, go ahead.
It's actually a pretty big dog when you think about it, Scooby-Doo. But he's quirky, he's memorable, and he's also a fraidy cat, even though he's actually a really big dog. Like, if he was a mean dog, he'd be terrifying.
Yeah. I always, all of a sudden, when you're mentioning that, the only thing I can think of, did you ever watch The Venture Brothers?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
There was that episode where they had, like, the Scooby-Goo gang, sort of.
Yeah, the grimdark version of him, yes. Lack of better term.
And the dog was kind of, like, talking to the Shaggy character and about, like, I don't know, like the Demon Lord or something like that.
Exactly.
I'm just like, yeah.
Yeah. What if, that's a good question. What if your pet is essentially, like, one of the original samples of familiars was it was supposed to be the Devil's Familiar, the conduit. What if your pet is a conduit to another plane or from the Outer Reach or from the Dark or from Dimension 5? You know, which adds a whole new element there. Or, for example, Mysteries Incorporated, if I'm going to go back to Scooby-Doo, there's a reason why they had groups where one animal talked is because they were actually channeling, for lack of a better term, Cthulhu. A lot of communications. Yes.
Weird.
And Mystery Incorporated takes a really weird turn, to put it mildly. Spoilers. Sorry, guys.
No, it's fine. Okay. But no, I think, in the terms of, like, abject weirdness, like, is this a weird pet to have? Is this a weird familiar to have? I don't mind all those weird quirks as long as they add to the gameplay and don't take away from it. To kind of contrast that a little bit, like, I love, you know, talking to animals. I've run into characters or players who do, like, my character is actually the cat, but my owner is the one that does all of these, like, functional things, so on and so forth. Paladin mounts and other mounts in other cases, but like with the paladin, that's where it really comes into prominence, are the ones that get in the way more often than not. When you're a paladin, you're going to go into a dungeon, you're going to go into a castle. And, as awesome as it would be to bring your horse into a dungeon, it never works out. And so I think that's the one. You don't forget about it. You just, It's too cumbersome. And there's been a handful of solutions to that. And then I've never been really satisfied with any of them, really.
Yeah.
So
they transform into a horseman? I don't know.
Well, like, they can magically summon it, or, you know, they can make it, like, somehow smaller. But it never has been satisfactory. Like, I haven't really been ever happy with the solutions that have been put forth. But I guess the most recent addition has just kind of made them not a class feature so much as they're just like kind of an extra incidental spell that you can use, but it's still kind of, I feel like it kind of robs the paladin from their coolness. Maybe I'll have to just play a paladin in a Birthright game and I'll get it out of my system.
That's perfect. Because, well, when you deal with media, a horse is very important, whether it's medieval or Western society. Like, we remember Comet from The Lone Ranger, or any of these other singing cowboys, and how the horse was in many ways more important than anything else they owned.
Comet.
Oh, sorry. Silver. Ah! I crossed my genres. Silver. Hi-ho, Silver. I should know that by now.
Yeah, I was about to say.
I'm trying to think of which horse was named Comet.
Can't remember now.
But, of course, it makes me think of Briscoe County Jr.
Oh, yes!
Man, I love that show.
Oh.
Yeah, that was definitely the Weird West.
Yeah. Yes.
Gotta love. That was a very interesting. That was a show that, in my opinion, was so way ahead of its time.
Oh, it's my goodness! Yeah.
It's like, it's funny because you could not. I can't even ever trying to imagine them trying to do a reboot of that show, because it's just like, it's not quite the same. It definitely had a time and place, and it definitely was ahead of its time, but yet, you know, similar shows have come up afterwards, and they've, you know, in terms of some of the stylistics pieces of it, and even the way it's run, and you're like, yep, it was just ahead of its time. People didn't get it at the time it was shown, and now people are like, I can't believe the show existed. Why didn't I know about this? Well, you know, it's just the nature of TV shows,
yeah,
you know, or any medium. I mean, take your pick: books, music, TV, films, and you're just like, wow, you know. Even if sometimes visually they're not as exciting as they could be, the concepts were there, and you're just like, that was just ahead of its time, and that's all you have. That's all you have to say.
Yeah. I'm not disagreeing there. Yeah, it is Comet with Briscoe County. That's probably what I was channeling my genres, because I love that series too. But but there's also a problem when it comes to having a mount. What if you have the cool, awesome mount and nobody else does? Like, for example, let's say you have a Pegasus and nobody else can fly.
Yeah.
Or what if your mount's a shapeshifter? You know, basically change to whatever shape it needs in order to maximize pain, or maybe it's a nightmare from the abyss, you know, from the dark lands.
Yeah, that's a tough one, because I think that's where you fall into the category of, I mean, even without overshadowing the other players, the mount even overshadows the player that owns it, or has it, I think. I mean, so, yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, it's one thing, and if you're running a campaign where everyone has winged horses, but you know, when you're the only one, that does become a problem.
Yeah, because it's kind of a double-edged sword. If you have everybody has a Pegasus, they're not really that special,
right?
But if you only one person has a Pegasus, everybody else feels slighted unless they have the equivalent of magical items or artifacts or whatever, and even then, it's a balancing act. Okay.
Well, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, you could almost, in some aspects, almost everything we're talking about, pets, I don't know why this just hit me. You could even, you know, I mean, you could almost apply it kind of like, you know, I don't know. I don't think they even do this anymore because they've kind of stopped. But back in the original AD&D, you could have intelligent swords, a.k.a. intelligent weapons. And you almost, it's the same problem, almost.
Yeah. Yeah, what happens when your sword is cooler than you are?
Right.
Or would you consider one of the classic 80s movies of that era, which has a very unique aspect, but it's almost like a pet-based thing? Of course, I'm referring to Lady Hawk, where during the day, the guy is human, but his wife is a hawk. But during the night, she's human and he's a wolf. Is that even doable in any system? Kind of the idea of the timeshare.
Hmm. guess. It would be tough. I mean, that's definitely, I mean, because you basically, you effectively have, you have one of two options. You either have one character playing both human forms with the pets as NPCs, or you have two different players willing to play the pet on the off hours, if you will.
Yeah.
Both of them can be very challenging. I think it's doable. I just think, again, this is one that you need player buy-in either way goes.
Yeah.
And obviously Game Master buy-in, and the players would have to know the limitations there for up. I would say that, again, much like the movie, it would be something that would be like a very direct, like, let's break the curse kind of campaign. I don't think I would do something like that long term.
Yeah, I could see that. Definitely. Also, I just had this crazy idea that I want to throw out there as well. What happens when your pet is kind of imaginary? Like, one of my favorite cartoons of my youth, of course, is Calvin and Hobbes. And let's say you're carrying around a stuffed animal that actually is a pet or a familiar or what have you. But it only is animated under a particular set of circumstances.
It kind of reminds me, I don't know if you watch this show, it's kind of obscure, but it was on Nickelodeon a long time ago called Space Cases.
Go on.
One of the characters who actually went on to be in Firefly, the mechanic woman whose name I forget, but she was a teenager at the time and she played this character. Like, that was kind of the conceit, was that it was all these teenagers with one like adult that was with them. They went on a school trip in space in like the far future and they got lost in space. But the one character had like an imaginary friend who was like out of phase in another dimension and only she could see, and nobody believed her until there was some kind of a weird event that then like switched them places so that the imaginary friend turned out to be real, and then the other one, like the original character, ended up like being in the other realm or whatever. But like I could see that being the case, especially in like a fantasy game where so many things could be like, well, yeah, in this world of like, you know, Medusas and ghosts, who's gonna really question whether or not you have like your imaginary friend might actually be real in some sense.
Yeah.
I think it depends on the game, because I'm just thinking, not, you know, not that I play a lot of the hero system anymore, but let's say the imaginary pet has certain abilities. In many ways, I mean, the way the hero system is always written is like you could write up the power and the special effect is it's the imaginary pet or animal. You know, and in that aspect, it is more of a projection of the player rather than the imaginary animal. But that's the effect.
Like, I just got this really awesome idea, like, you know, having come from that Palladium Rifts background, having one of those MOM crazy type characters who has an imaginary pet that does things through their own psychic powers. So like they just think that it's some creature there doing the things where it's actually their own psychic powers, like hurting a person or moving a person or doing things, so that it's just a function of their insanity, that they think that that thing exists, even though they're the ones who are causing all of the things to happen.
Yeah. Cause that gives me like an idea, like, the Tick, when that the old classic Tick, where he had essentially a companion for one episode where it was basically he made himself a sidekick who was basically a block of wood. Or if you end up having like a pet rock with a smiley face and that's your pet, and it's surprisingly effective when you throw it. Or what if it's like actually really is a little elemental, just doesn't always very active. You know, all these are possibilities when you start playing with familiars. Like, I actually remember writing an article about that a long time ago. But that's neither here nor there. Other examples are, of course, post-apocalyptic, where you get the really weird alien. Like, has anybody here seen A Boy and His Dog?
Yes.
Okay. And Fallout was definitely dead, and they ended up having a character who's pretty much consistent across most of the genres, which is Dogmeat, who is obviously the non-psychic version where, you know, you have a dog, and it's awesome, and it's the post-apocalypse. And he keeps appearing across different games because of that. Or if you get something even weirder, like something that's radiated. You know? Or, I don't know, Chris was notorious for having all sorts of crazy creatures that you could basically try to make friends with, you know, that you might end up as a sidekick of, or vice versa.
Yeah, you know what, I don't know why, but all of a sudden when you're talking about this, the only thing I can think of is situations where the pet is the character.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm thinking of Lassie specifically.
Oh, heck yeah.
Oh, yeah. Or, Lassie had a pet human named to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
like,
or,
well, dang it.
And then, of course, there was the old Flipper TV show, which was a little weird.
Yeah.
But, you know, well,
again,
but again,
I'm Canadian, so therefore I have to bring up the littlest hobo, a.k.a. one of the smartest dogs to ever live. Wanders around, helps people, and gets the hell out. So he's basically his own PC.
Right. So.
Saying Jeff, go on.
Oh, no, I'm just thinking.
Well, again, like, also the classic thief pet. Like, I'm sure everybody here has seen the Disney version of Aladdin, and of course, Ubu is awesome, even if he is silly. And conversely, Iago was Jafar's familiar, as played by Gilbert Godfrey. And, yeah. And it's funny because Iago actually goes through a heel-face turn where he ultimately ends up with the rest of the party, even though he's a greedy, conniving bugger, because Jafar went one line too far. So what happens when your familiar betrays you? Because that could be fun for a story arc.
That was to kind of take it on a slight tangent, that was one of the better Disney televised, serialized cartoons, was that Aladdin one. And that was where you really got to see Iago be a character, outside of, like, the sequel movies, which weren't very good. But, But what you were, to take it back to what we were saying, what you were saying reminded me of Beastmaster. And he would have the ferrets constantly go, like, oh, let's fetch the keys so we can get out of this prison cell.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, Beastmaster's a great example for exactly what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Low-budget fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
With Rip Torn as the bad guy.
That's right.
Oh, man. I have a soft spot, despite what happened in that movie, for the first one. You know, after the second one was basically, we didn't have a budget, the movie. And it's just kind of funny how it went from there. But no, that would be an interesting way to play, because ultimately, I think that'd be a druid of some sort or a ranger to try to play some character like that, because you basically have the right tool for the job, and you'd basically be acting as an orchestra for these various critters who would basically be doing your actions for you.
Yeah, like a Swiss Army zoo.
Exactly. Okay, you need to coin that, Jinch. You know that.
It is interesting, though, that I know that one of the games I played actually had a class for Beastmaster. And that was, you know, kind of the stick, is that they would gain animal companions as they progress through levels.
I don't really have a problem with that. If anything, that seems to be one of the biggest failings of F20 is your pet's more awesome than you are sometimes, but he's not meant to go into the dungeon. If he goes to the dungeon, there's a good chance he's going to die, and then you no longer have an awesome pet. Kind of the catch-22.
Right. I remember in Pathfinder, specifically, there's like a summoner class that gets an idol on, and they're basically like a pet that's more powerful than pets are normally allowed to be. And you could take feats or abilities or whatever that would make, like, more of them that were weaker. We would always joke that we should have just a game of all summoners that all took that feat or whatever, and so it would effectively be like 28 characters in one. And just to make the dungeon master, or the game master, I should say, lose their mind, like, in the first session.
I can see that. I think it'd be a lot of fun, too, to be honest with you.
All right, well, I think we need to really kind of wrap this one up here.
Okay.
Any closing questions or comments?
Just one. What happens when your pet becomes the greatest danger of your party? I'm going to bring up, of course, Gremlins. You know,
well, you know,
it doesn't necessarily have to be you, but you get the idea.
You start pulling the. I remember something one of the groups I played with said after that movie Outbreak came out. See a cute monkey, beat it with a stick.
Well, and I think I've seen at least one game, one campaign come to ruin when the animal companion had too low a will saving throw and a charm animal got them to steal like the MacGuffin from the party and give it to the evil bad guy.
Okay. I think I'm done. Unless there's anything else you guys want?
Yeah, I'm good.
I think we're going to... Oh, one little tidbit. I was just actually looking through that game I was talking about, the Beastmaster. They actually had the ability for certain players to actually learn how to speak with animals as actual languages, not a mystical ability.
Nice.
Makes sense, to be honest with you. Otherwise, you're really basically playing charades for most of the game, and that might annoy people.
Yeah, you know, you become Dr. Doolittle, whatever.
Yes.
Okay, Kickstarters. Let's start with the big one. Advanced Laboratory is actually being kickstarted. They actually have reached their goal. So, I've actually never played any of the versions of Labyrinth Lord. Have you guys?
Nope.
Nah, I collected the book. I picked up the book because it was free on their site, but that's about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty much, you know, OSR type title. And they're looking, it's weird because from what I'm seeing, all their pledge levels are at least some sort of hardcover option.
Yeah.
So, you got a PDF with it, but...
Sorry, go on.
So basically, but on to their credit, really, this is just the way they described it. It's Labyrinth Lord and the Advanced Edition Companion combined into one volume seamlessly. So if you actually already have those two, you don't necessarily need this unless you just want one that's integrated together.
Yep.
But they reached their goal, and they say their little tag that they have is they've funded in 10 hours. And they still got 27 days to go on this thing. So.
This is only confirming what I've said before. Give people a chance to enjoy your game before you try to kickstart it. Because this is why it basically funded in 10 hours is because it's been around for 10 years. They're not selling anything particularly new, but they're not lying to you in any way, shape, or form. And they're only selling the product. They're not pretending to sell anything else, and I'll give them full kudos for here's what I have, here's what it is. If you have questions, you can let me know, but I'm not going to get you like a funny hat.
Right, we're not going to like do terry cloth, you know, Hugh Hefner robes as a, you know, what's the word I'm looking for, as a bonus if you buy so many things or whatever.
Yeah.
They're not going out of their way to make physical product for something that doesn't need physical product.
Yeah, and oddly enough, I give them full kudos for that because that cuts down their problems with bottom line or not making their funding. Like, unless something really weird happens, this is one of those ones that feels like a safe bet even before it made its Kickstarter. Because the product's done, that's all they're selling, they've had 10 years to get ready. If you're going to pick something up, this is probably the safest bet you're going to get on a Kickstarter. Like, now, bear in mind, we might be eating my words in a year, but so far, so good.
All right, next up we have the Eye of the Cyclops from Forge of Ice. And it's weird because it's a minute. It's just a it's like a little, they say systemic. I don't want to say, they say system neutral. I was going to say agnostic, but they say neutral. And I like the cover for the material. It kind of reminds me of those like weird science fiction / fantasy magazines, you know, that had just story magazines. You know, are some of those weird books from like the 70s. Kind of has that vibe to me. I think that's cool.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Well, again, it feels like that sword and sorcery. It feels like something you'd, like you said, it feels like a 70s comic book, and that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
And, you know, of course, they're doing a whole bunch of miniatures, too. And I do have to say, I do like their Cyclops penny that they have in here. He's kind of cool looking.
Yeah. He's very gaunt, and that actually has a certain element there.
Yeah. So, and they have some sort of, whatever this Cyclops skull for, you know, the cult. Cyclops cult.
Yeah, and apparently that Cyclops is buck tooth, but that's okay.
I think it's kind of cool. Nothing I'll be backing, but kind of cool. And they were only asking for $3,600, and they got it already.
Nice.
So,
I think. Well, that, I.
Yeah. What was it?
Not much to say. Just calling Jeff.
Next up we have Rise of the Nefarious, a 5th edition campaign. So, again, they weren't looking for a lot of money. They actually reached it. It's the way their tagline is, just a race to the forgotten city of Macandire?
Why not? Yeah. We'll go with that.
Where glory and treasure awaits. So,
if we're wrong, let us know.
The Rise of the Nefarious. I don't know if I like the Nefarious. That sounds weird. But hey, whatever. There's only so many adverbs in the English language, and including the ones we invented, right?
Absolutely. I've heard worse D&D modules.
Yeah. I've seen worse D&D modules.
I've played in worse D&D modules.
Okay.
All right, you win. Here's your gold star. But they reached their goal. The digital version of it is $20, $30 for a soft cover. I don't know. Again, this is one of those ones that if I was interested in it, I probably would only do the PDF.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that as a slam against print products, but I think I've explained to everyone. I think in this day and age, to me, main rule books, maybe some of the supplemental rule books are okay, but most of the adventures, unless there's something very specific about that adventure, like, I don't know, like how they've created, like there's like the Call of Cthulhu adventures where they have like a Kickstarter just for props for that adventure. That's about the only time I would say okay. But for most adventures, I'm a big fan of, hey, I'll print it out or not even print it out at all. Use my, use my laptop, use my tablet, and just go with that. I think definitely, the electronic document has definitely changed the way we game. And I think anyone who believes anything different is a fool.
Mm-hmm. I would agree.
That said, like I still like a print product for my main rulebook unless I have no other options.
I'm always going to be a sucker for print, but ultimately I don't have the space for it.
Well, I think that's what it is, too. I mean, I remember growing up, I would have Dragon magazines, and my mother, to be honest with you, I had Dragon magazines that I would actually have to cut the articles I wanted to keep and throw away the rest of the magazines. Because my mother wouldn't let me keep all that stuff. You know, now, many, many years later, I have the complete Dragon magazine collection on CD. Which is much more useful. So, all right. So now
it's always good to pull out tidbits of information. Yeah. But on to the next one. Sorry.
So now we have the Forgotten Dungeon Mega Adventure. It says it's for D&D 5th edition DS. I don't know what DS is. And 77W? Anyone familiar with DS or 77W?
But I'm actually familiar with 77 Worlds RPG. I actually, I got the Kickstarter for a while back, about a month ago. Basically, 77 Worlds stuff, and he built his own world, and best I can understand it is with the cards. I haven't had a chance to really play with it, but I'm familiar with it. And of course, we're familiar with James M. Ward, who started Gamma World.
Yeah, so this is really old school. I guess the adventure is done by some old school art, is basically done by one of the old school D&D artists. And there's actually a introduction to the adventure by Ernest Gax and James M. Ward.
I'm gonna lie to you. This is the most tempting product, yes, because I think it appeals to my inner grog nerd.
I actually had to explain to one of the one of the people who is in the Dice Camera Action, the live play for Dungeons and Dragons, was at a panel in full costume, and I had to explain to her, which was cool. It was a cool moment. I explained to her what grognard meant. She had no idea.
Why?
And she's like, "What is a grognard?" And I'm like, "Someone who's been playing these games for a long time." And I said, "You qualify. You're a grognard technically." And she's like, "Oh wow, I'd never heard that term before." So it was kind of neat.
That's kind of funny. All right, so next up we have the Kerith module. It says a fully mathed realm with campaign, original monsters, and content that is compatible with, obviously, Dungeons & Dragons. And supposedly, this what they're releasing is the realm of Sonder, the first world in a multi-world universe. First off, I hate to say it, you lost me when you say multi-world universe. That's just me. And I don't mean that to be a slam, unless, you know, I don't know. I think it's just me. I've never been a fan of a game that has a whole bunch of, like, either world hopping or dimension hopping or any of that. Mm-hmm. I think some of that just has to do with some people I've played with who that was definitely their thing, and they pretty much ruined everything that they ever ran.
It's easy to get into that, to hop onto that train and go off the rail, so to speak.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons I don't particularly like time traveling games either.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Well,
it's hard to do.
Like, interdimension jumping should feel like, I don't know, the frosting on a cake.
Mm-hmm.
Unless it's something like really specific, like Planescape, which is probably the only exception, is an exception to the rule, or I guess a really good Rifts game could probably pull it off as well. But then you'd be losing a good chunk of what makes the environment cool, which is hanging around North America doing absolutely absurd things.
Yes. No, really, any game I've ever been in where the ability to move from one dimension to the other, or what have you, has always focused on like two, maybe three places tops. It's never been this like, let's go to 5 or 50 different places in the span of this campaign. Because anytime you do that, anytime I've seen that happen, it's because the person running the game had not the attention span to want to focus on one place, and that doesn't make for a good game.
Yeah.
Unless that's your cup of tea, and I really have never met more than one or two people
in my lifetime. Yeah, but the only time I think something like that even begins to work is you have to know that's happening at the beginning of the campaign. I'm thinking of,
yes.
I don't know. I mean, I'll take the TV series Sliders as an example. It kind of works in that setting because the party just is like, I'm lost. I'm always going to be traveling to this new realm. Every adventure is going to be this whole thing where that's part of the adventure, is I have to learn the rules of the world so I can solve whatever problem I need to, so I can go to the next world and hopefully go home.
Yeah. But even Doctor Who focuses on, here's your story arc. You're stuck in 17th century France.
Right.
But when it's done, then it's a new game within the game. You might be in 22nd century Alpha Centauri.
Right. So, you know, and I mean, obviously science fiction games have this where you have interplanetary travel, each planet's different. So, I mean, it's kind of along those lines where it's less, I don't know. I think it depends on how it's approached. We could actually do a whole episode on that. So.
Okay. Yeah. Well, but okay.
No, sorry, Ish. No, I'm saying put it on the list is what I'm saying.
No, right. I was just going to say really quick, like with your Star Trek style games where you go from planet to planet, the premise stays the same. Like the characters stay, like they're the constant. And so that helps ground the game because you're in control. You have a ship that you can return to nominally. And so it's not like you're flying off the rails each time you go to a different world and the door slams shut behind you where you have to like adapt to something completely new. That helps ground it, ironically. Anyways.
You're always in the Federation and you have the holodeck and you have your good buddies on the ship and it makes perfect sense. You have a house that moves.
Yes.
Yeah, pretty much. All right, so next up we have the Pocket Companion, a Tavern Guide, which says it's a whole, it's 100 pages, and it says it's filled with 40 tavern NPCs, plot hooks, and tools for, you know, obviously the traditional tavern that's in classic RPGs. Which, hey, you know what? Who doesn't need some tavern descriptions? I kind of like the idea of this. Whether or not I'd buy it, I don't know. What are they asking cost-wise? So, receive the rewards along with the NPC guide. So the whole companion is about $13 US, or it's £10 for the PDF version. That's not too bad.
Sounds fun.
Yeah. I like the idea of it, you know. So I think that's kind of cool. Who doesn't need tavern information? I mean, especially in fantasy games, that's almost ubiquitous that you have a tavern.
Yeah, and on top of that, you need the quirks, you need the personality, and there's a reason we keep using taverns. A good one has a lot of personality.
Yeah. All right, next up we have The Secrets of the Nether City, an immersive dungeon sandbox created for the Adventurer Conqueror King system and other D20 OSR RPGs. The name of that, the Adventure Conqueror King system, sounds familiar, but I know I've never played it.
Not ringing any bells with me.
Yeah, it sounds familiar. I don't know if I've ever, you know, if we've ever covered it. So, typical evil slumbers kind of system. I mean, no background.
Mm-hmm. I do like the term Kilo Dungeon.
Yeah. So, I mean, they have 25 days to go, and they're just a couple grand from their goal, so I don't see that as a problem. They'll probably reach their goal. So, I do like the name Nether City.
Yeah. Again, it looks like a fun little adventure here. It's just, they're asking for 20K and they only got, well, they might make it. They still got time.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, they're just a few grand away, so I think they will. I don't think that's going to be a problem with how many days they have left.
And I love their explanation of a killer dungeon. Another city is bigger than ordinary dungeon, but not as big as a mega dungeon. So it's kind of like they're using metric.
Oh my god.
That's fine. All right, so next up we have the Blackwind Project, a new plot-driven tabletop RPG. They've actually reached their goal. It's been funded.
Hey.
So they have the Blackwind Core Manual. Is the fun? They describe it as kind of a generic system, is what they describe it as. Game Masters assemble the story like a jigsaw, creating a complex plots with ease to keep the story flexible. This is one of those ones where I definitely would have to read the starter adventure, because they have a link to download the starter adventure. And there's more information, obviously. They have a WordPress site. So I guess you can get previews and stuff. This is one I'd have to actually look more into before I would even begin to consider, you know, backing it. Although
I'm actually kind of impressed that they're one of the few ones that basically uses the taglines, our own unique core system that doesn't feel like it's flopping on its face. I'm actually kind of impressed. Yeah. That alone intrigues me. And they even have their own WordPress site that gives more sites about the games, the articles, and additional information.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's what I mean. They have enough stuff that you could make a decision. They weren't really asking really that much money at all. And I think you can get, for about $10 US, you can actually get the PDF of the core manual. So
that's not bad.
No, that's not bad at all. All right, next up is one that I thought was the graphics for it were, I wouldn't say amusing, but reminded me of some books I've read, which is The Harvesters, the role-playing game, an RPG where the smallest creatures become the world's greatest heroes. Enter the world of Harvesters. This kind of reminds me a lot of like Redwall and Mouse Guard kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that's where they got some of their inspiration from.
Yeah. So,
and
I wonder how they're going to stand apart.
I don't know. I mean, they've already reached their goal. They were only asking a grand. They have seven. And the PDF, basically the PDF version of the game is $10. So.
Yeah. I don't know. Hey, hello there. Okay. sorry, guys.
That's okay. He has stuff to say, or she.
Yeah, she. Definitely. Well, maybe she just wants to... Well, maybe she's one of the monsters in this game. I don't know.
Maybe.
Okay. Well, again, Finding Some Barrows was the one that introduced me to this concept of using essentially small creatures in a large world. So I'd imagine this is basically a small... You know, if you took the measurements, it'd probably be a lot smaller when it comes down to it there. And you can play it silly, or you can play it... Well, if you want to go dark, you can go all the way up to Watership Down, but...
It's funny, looking at what some of the graphics that they have and some of the artwork and even some of the miniatures, you know what comes to mind is the Disney version, of animated version of Robin Hood, where Robin Hood is a fox.
Yeah.
That's what this kind of reminds me of, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. That could be fun. But again, like you said, it's a very saturated market when it comes to human-animal hybrids. I can name at least four or five different games on this thing, depending on what they're trying to do. So, obviously, they made their cut, so you're going to get a product, at least as far as that's concerned. I don't know. I'd have to see it before I could make a decision.
All right, let's get through these last few here. We have the Quantum Black Dark Designs, which is, I guess, is a second book for the Quantum Black RPG. I'm not even familiar with Quantum Black. Are you? Either one of you guys?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Not, but I do like the art.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's some sort of weird horror-esque, almost Cthulhu-esque type of game.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, again, I think it's trying to give a real X-Files vibe.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, maybe that 50s horror, but...
Yeah. So obviously you need the Quantum Black rulebook to use it, but... So if you're familiar with Quantum Black, obviously this is something you're going to probably want if it's a game that you love and you play.
Yeah.
All right, so let's get up to the next one, which I actually think is pretty interesting, just from obviously who wrote it, which is Dragon Skills Fantasy RPG by James N. Ward and Stephen A. Lee.
Okay. Yeah, just the titles alone of the people involved. Yeah.
So. You know, obviously, James Ward has, well, let's face it, definitely did one of my favorite games, which was Gamma World.
Mm-hmm.
And he's done definitely done a lot of other things in his time. So.
I'm just looking at some of his autobiography that he's listing there for showing purposes here.
Yeah.
He made a game called The Great Shakes Charlie Brown Game. I don't know if I ever want to play it, but I kind of want to see what it is.
All right, that's a Google lookup right now, because I'm curious myself. I've never heard of it.
Okay.
There was a time.
Really? It's a little board game.
Nice.
There was a time where people went crazy, and I mean like out of their minds, licensing weird things for role-playing games. Like there was a Dynasty.
Yeah, this isn't a board game. This isn't an RPG. This is like some sort of weird little roll and match dice game. It looks like they have cards with the, I guess, the faces on the dice on them, and then I guess as you roll the dice, I guess you somehow match them in certain ways, and it's almost like you do bingo.
Oh, well, that's different.
Yeah. So, but he did that. That's funny. It's for ages 4 and up, 1 to 4 players. Wow, that's kind of kooky. I like it.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting that he would list that. So anyway, obviously, this is another one that I would have to read a hell of a lot more on to decide, but I thought it was interesting that, you know, okay, here's another fantasy game. I'm tough on fantasy games because obviously there's a lot of them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So this is one that I would definitely have to read and see if there's something that I specifically need.
And, mm-hmm.
But they're just a few. They're almost at their goal. They're only asking $4,000. They're a little shy of that right now. So obviously if this is something that you're reading, you're like, if you're even interested and have free cash, it might be worth backing because it looks like it's probably going to happen.
I ain't going to lie to you. I might be sold on the picture alone. They have a picture of a four things down that basically looks like a medieval version of Battle Cat.
Nice.
All right, so we have Gathering, Children of the Evertree, and it's just described as a round-table, free-form, world-building, and RPG game from the designer behind Ten Candles, which is a game I'm not familiar with. But they have... What was that?
It's actually a really good game. The problem is you have to be in the mood for nihilism if you want to play it. Because at the end, everybody dies.
So, oh, wow.
The goal is actually, they've reached their goal. They're asking for $10,000. They got almost 12 and a half, a little over. So, I don't know. This is another one that you'd have to read more of and see if it's something that you would be interested in.
Yeah, again, it's more of a, it looks, I might be wrong, but it looks more like a storytelling type game.
It probably is, which for me, not that I'm opposed to storyteller games, but it's not my cup of tea for RPGs. But for people who are, then this might be something they want to look at.
Yeah, it's got a definitely different feeling when it comes down to this stuff here. And seeing if Ten Cows came, like, I think with this, I don't know if they won in any, but it came darn close. So they obviously have the cred as far as their own skill set's concerned, at least show and impress themselves. Totally different feel for the game. Plus, apparently it's a tarot-based game. So, I don't know. Looks neat. I don't have an opinion yet, but I would need to be pushed over to the side. I have to have it sold on me.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll look at the video later. I don't know. Okay.
All right. Next up, we have the Starship Infernum, a tabletop RPG of interstellar survival. And so, reading their thing, apparently, this was... it started as a pickup or an one-page sheet expansion to their previous game that they have called Purgatory's House. And so they realized it was a whole separate game, so they reworked it, and now they're releasing it. Some sort of sci-fi horror-ish survival game is the way it's kind of sold.
Mm-hmm.
Could be interesting. I have to say for myself, not interested, although I do like the fact that if you do back it, you immediately get access to their beta test rules.
Well, and I'm never going to say no about a game that somebody's trying to build, but I would definitely have to try it here in order to see. You know, obviously they're going for simplicity here. As far as their world design concerned, because that's one of their selling points, is there's no complicated rules to memorize, no prep, and the game is full of examples. So it sounds almost like one of my favorite superhero games is actually Star Wars Saga, because you could do a lot on the fly by pulling cards out. And I wonder if they're doing something similar, but only like say with a table or something.
Yeah,
or you pull 3 cards out and there's your story arc.
Yeah, because they describe it as, you know, the ship is different every time, so it's an RPG sort of. I would say it's probably it's one of those games that probably straddles that it's an RPG but a board game at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Is the way I'm kind of reading this.
Yeah, that looks neat.
Now, this is one, Quest, the RPG or the role-playing adventure game for everyone, and they were asking $65,000, and they got it.
Huh.
No, they didn't just get it. They almost doubled it. Holy cannoli.
I know. That's why I'm like, huh. So, according to their tag here, they got funded in 3 hours.
Whoa.
Wow.
Not 3 hours, 36 hours, but that's still good.
Dude, still. A day and a half.
Yeah. So, I guess they use a unique card deck and some other things. I don't know. I have a mixed feeling about card decks in games.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, obviously, I play Savage Worlds where I use a regular card deck for initiative and a few other things. But that's not like, oh my god, I now have to have a special deck of cards to play the game.
And I don't like games that use unique dice. Like, that's a bridge too far for me.
Yeah.
Well, dude, all you need is one time with your cat and suddenly you don't have dice.
Well, I don't mind unique dice. I mean, after all, let's face it, D&D, at the time that it was published, those were unique dice.
Yeah.
But I have a problem with unique dice that are hard to get.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the reasons I'm not a big fan of Fudge and Fate, because to a certain degree, yeah, they're D6s, but they're not quite.
I have a similar experience when it comes to Star Wars, the latest version. It looked incredible, and then I realized, do I really trust myself with those dice? No.
So, anyway, definitely probably worth more of a look if you like fantasy games. I mean, with that backing, it's at least worth a look to decide if it might be something that you might be interested in. All right, so now comes one that I love the tagline. I have no idea how good of a game it will ever be, but the Mountain Witch, Samurai Blood Opera and Mythical Japan. And the way they describe it is Seven Samurai meets Reservoir Dogs.
And oh, wow.
It's a tabletop RPG about trust, betrayal, and confronting everyone's fate.
Yeah, I actually listened to a couple of podcasts where they actually talked about this game. It's completely based on a trust mechanic, where trust is actually a resource management.
Huh.
So that alone makes it kind of intriguing here, where you're hunting, they're trying to emulate one of those Japanese story tales where, you know, you have the samurai going out to the witch, and, well, then you find out maybe the witch might be right or might be wrong, depending, like, the idea was that when you ride to the Mountain Witch, the story arc is almost done, and you can go anywhere from Colonel Kurtz to a very sympathetic character, depending on how the characters are played, because there's a good chance you might try to kill each other before you get there. Because, remember, everybody's a Ronin, which means you don't have a master in Japan. And obviously, because of that, all your characters have baggage.
And they might even have steamer trunks.
Exactly.
Nice. All right. But yeah, it's interesting. They were asking about 10 grand, and they have 38 and a half right now, so that's kind of cool.
Again, I'm glad they succeeded, and I'll be looking forward to see what the results are.
All right, last up, we have the Black Hack RPG 2nd Edition. I'm not even familiar with the first edition. Either one of you guys?
I've heard of it, but I'm not terribly familiar. I just know it's another OSR clone.
Yeah. So they were asking roughly the equivalent of 6.6 thousand dollars. They're up to around equivalent about 43 and some change. So we have a few Kickstarters this time that have actually really hit their goal.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, this is one of those times when there's about four or five, I wouldn't mind looking over just to see how they did it. Yeah. Because it might be inspiration for your own projects.
Yeah.
All right, so last up, let's talk about the bundles of holding. First up is Delta Green. It says Delta Green Plus 2, so some of the Delta Green products. I myself have never really got into Delta Green.
I personally haven't actually played it, but I have a few people I know that they're real fanboys. Or girls, depending on the gender.
So so
of the game. So I did support Fall of Delta Green, so I'm kind of curious when that shows up. Beyond that, I try it once. Human Rights. Okay, that's funny.
Yeah.
Their charity is Human Rights Watch, which feels fitting for some bloody reason.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So the other bundle of holding we have is the Apocalypse Engine Plus 3, which includes obviously some Apocalypse Engine supplements in the mix. I'm not familiar actually with any of the ones that they actually have in this list.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm not either. So,
Doctors Without Borders is their charity that they will be donating stuff to.
Okay.
And then lastly, we still got time on this one. Dungeon World Plus 3, where they have Dungeon World and some other stuff in the mix, and they are also doing Doctors Without Borders. Which makes sense because Apocalypse Engine, Dungeon World, potato, patata.
Mm-hmm. I got no problem with that. Sounds good.
There's really only the bundle's holdings. So, right now, this time, this go around, not too much that I would want to do for the bundle of holdings, but obviously, if you're into Apocalypse World, or the other one, or even Delta Green, then there's obviously some stuff for you. Any closing comments?
Just the usual. If you've had a game where you've had a pet or animal familiar or animal companion or mount that's played a prominent role, feel free to let us know all about it. Tell us about your experiences.
Yeah. That said, I am. I have one comment on leaving us stuff. Send us an email at info@rpgcircus.com. You can leave posts on the pages. The only thing that has now been removed is the SpeakPipe application. We weren't using it. There weren't enough people using it anymore, so it didn't make sense to actually pay a monthly fee to use it. And they also had some changes due to the various legal changes. I don't know why, but they stopped supporting having SpeakPipe on the Facebook due to, privacy concerns, something to do with their code. And I'm like, you know what? It's not worth it anymore. So, but that doesn't mean you cannot send us an automated. You can't, record something with your voice recorder and send it to us in an email. So, you can still do that. That's pretty easy. Anything else? Are we good to go?
I think we're good.
All right. Yep. Well, then with that, I say we shall see everyone in about 2 weeks, where we'll choose a new topic to rant about for an hour and a half. RPG Circus is released on a Creative Commons Attribution US License 3.0. For more information, please visit creativecommons.org.